We see people being born right in front of our eyes. We see the mothers being pregnant. We see people dying right in front of our eyes. Still, we do not have a complete knowledge of the process and the phenomena and the event. To us, life begins somewhere in mother's womb, and life ends at the cremation ground or wherever we die. An entire process that we go through between birth to death, and anything that we do, anything that we accomplish, anything that we try to go through is simply an effort. We are simply making an effort to complete our journey from our delivery room to the cremation ground. Nothing more than that. We think that we are trying to accomplish this, that. We are trying to improve our career, get something done. But if you really analyze, you will find in your final analysis, you will find that all we have been doing so far is trying to complete this journey from delivery room to the funeral home. We make all those arrangements. We do not make any arrangements for being born and being raised. Someone else does it for us. But since we come to realize our existence and we gain some understanding about life, we make all the efforts how to have a safe journey to the funeral home. We know that a part of journey to the funeral home cannot be done by us. Our body cannot be carried to the funeral home by ourselves. Someone else has to carry it. So we make arrangements for that too. We try to make an arrangement how to dispose of our bodies. We make arrangements for everything. Somewhere we forget that this known part of life between birth to death, birth and death, is very small, very short, vast part of life lies before birth and after death. We do not do any preparation for that. For every single little things, we make lots of preparation, but nothing for death, nothing for birth. However, the curiosity is always there with us. We are always curious about knowing who we are, what we are, where did we come from, where do we go after we die, whether the realm of existence we reach after our death is delightful or not delightful, safe, secure. All these questions are always there. And since all those questions and their answers refer to an invisible, intangible realm of reality, since all those questions and their experiences refer to something which is imperceptible beyond our sensory perceptions, we become subject to people's opinions. And based on others' opinions, we develop belief, trust, faith, the basic components of our religion, all religions. Somewhere deep down, however, we are still not very sure that whatever we believe in is really true or not. Throughout our lives, we live with doubt. Throughout our lives, we live with doubt regarding our own faiths and beliefs. Now, what is that written? What is written in that book? Only two things. Number one, that we are bound by our own actions. No one else in life is responsible for our fortune and misfortune. Rather, we are responsible for our fortune and misfortune. However, there is a way of mending our way of life. There is a way of modifying our actions, the fruits of our actions. There is a way of undoing what we have done, at least to some degree. And there is a way of restructuring, modifying our destiny. We are not totally helpless. One point. Other point is that the mystery of life lies in the knowledge of death. If we understand the anatomy of dying and death, we can understand the anatomy of entire life force. And I have made very clear that process of that death consists of two portions. One is called process of dying, another is called event of death. Culmination of the process of dying is called the event of death. The entire picture of our life in its greatest detail is available to us during the process of dying. If we remain conscious of this process, then we can clearly see the book of life. And whatever we could not accomplish while we are alive, we can accomplish it during the time of dying, provided we are accompanied by fearlessness, we are accompanied by dispassion, non-attachment, desirelessness, provided we are accompanied by the eternal friend, the divine being, who can guide us when we are going through that turmoil. Those who have learned the technique that how not to allow the process of dying and death to become a chaotic state of mind, how not to let that particular phase of life, which is called process of dying, become turned into a turmoil, those who can remain firm, unperturbed, calm, tranquil in the face of death, such people can be blessed with the entire mystery of life and death, and then to them, the totality of knowledge is at their disposal. And that's what these masters are trying to relate. Now, let's start. Introduction. How we alone are responsible for our fortune and misfortune. Because as we sow, so shall we reap. This law is established law. And I hope and I believe that all of you agree with me, because this is not my hypothesis. It is a statement has been made by many, many great masters. And in one way or other, all great traditions of the world agree that as we sow, so shall we reap. If we are reaping fortunes today, if we are blessed with a human life, this must be a result of the seed that we planted somewhere long time ago. In the process of planting that seed of human life long time ago, there may have been many, many forces which helped us, which inspired us, which enabled us to plant the seed which manifested in the form of human life. That's a different story that could have been or good karma, that could have been grace of God, that could have been, you know, blessings of many sages, that could have been accident, that could have been nature's way of doing things that way, whatever is the case. But it is sure that the plant of life, plant of human life that we are experiencing today, witnessing today, had been planted long time ago. It takes 9 months for a baby to manifest. And before the baby really manifests and comes to this external world, before the baby is born, we do not know what are the subtle forces functioning behind the conception and the development of the fetus. We do not know all those things. There are so many subtle forces, and all of them are intangible. They are on work. The baby who is born, who is being born today, the birth, baby's birth was initiated long time ago, at least 34, 35, 36 weeks ago. What was being planted, what was being planned beforehand, we do not know. But certainly there was something long before. So anything even that happens during our lifetime here, that is also a result of something that we had done long time ago or yesterday. Everything in the universe follows a very, very standard law, formula, called law of cause and effect. Law of cause and effect. That is an established law of this universe, and human beings are not exempt from that law, or the human life is not exempt from that law. How our present is a continuation of our past, as I explained. Anything that you see today is continuation of the past. Human life, how human life is the most important stage in the evolutionary process. These are very important things to understand if we ever want to learn the mystery of birth and death, and if we ever want to penetrate the mystery of karma and reincarnation. That how human life is the most important stage in the evolutionary process. There is no human being. These are very, very simple, simple things. There are no other species which I give this example always. Anywhere I feel I get a little bit of space to give this example in any kind of lecture and seminars, I give this example. That there are no other creatures who can sit with their head, neck, and trunk straight. Always there is some problem in the body. Other species can't sit. There is no species. There is species. Species, 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 species. Okay. Who can lay down in Savasana, in corpse pose, and can do complete relaxation. Neither their mind nor their body is designed to have a complete rest even for 5 minutes in their whole lifetime. I have done lots of research on this subject. Figure out, is there any creature who can lay down on its back, completely flat, spine straight, and breathe comfortably? In most cases, body itself is not designed that way. And in some cases, even if there is a little bit the fear. Somebody said, what about a snake? No. Snake can not lay on its back. It lays on its belly. One thing. Other thing, as long as it is alive, it has to be wiggly. You can straighten a snake only after it's dead. Not before it's dead. So I could not find an example. A human being can imitate the behaviors of all other creatures, whereas other creatures cannot behave, cannot imitate the behaviors of other creatures and especially the behaviors of humans, although they try. All creatures are drawn to humans. And humans do not have any predators. There are no creatures who, in their normal condition of life, can ever think of humans being their food. A tiger, a lion, a crocodile will consider humans to be the last choice. God created humans in his own image, and the whole creation knows it. And therefore, nobody wants to dismantle this living shrine called human being. Out of ignorance, only one human tries to dismantle and kill and destroy other human beings. The entire creation feels a privilege, finds it to be a privilege to be in the service of humans. Human life is very precious. Whatever we can achieve in this human life cannot be achieved in other lifetimes. And certainly there is something that can be achieved only by being human. And if that is not achieved while we are human, before we die, then that is called greatest loss. Greatest loss is not to lose your money, wealth, property, wife, husband. No. Greatest loss is to die without accomplishing the purpose of life. Without knowing the purpose of life, you cannot accomplish. Therefore, self-realization is must. Only after self-realization, then you can have other realization and other achievements. That is the importance of human life. How to subdue? But what happens? Why I am here? There must be a reason. And what is that reason? That is called search. That's what we are trying to understand. We are trying to know something which we do not know what we are trying to know. Those who know that, what are they trying to know, they are a little bit closer to their destination. Because then they can walk faster and in a straightforward manner all the way to the goal. That is the first step. Trying to know what are we trying to know, that is the first step in our, that is one of the greatest achievement. And that's what this thing is all about. Yeah. And that thing also, we can know it very, very well during last few hours, last few moments of our life. And after that, even if one breath is left, that is plenty. That is plenty to accomplish, you know, to that is plenty to accomplish the rest of the goal. It's so precious. That last few moments are so precious. But what happens? During that time, our anger, hatred, jealousy, greed, attachment, desire, fear, everything comes forward, rushes. And those few moments, the most precious moments of our life, are when we are about to leave this body. But those precious moments get occupied by so many useless thoughts. Everything rushes. As long as we are alive, our conscious mind is working in coordination with our brain, nervous system, senses. Our mind works in a linear fashion. But when we become unconscious, when our senses, brain, nervous system do not coordinate with our conscious mind, and at that time, conscious mind fails to act properly, our linear thinking is also gone. At that moment, hundreds of thoughts simultaneously are presented to our mind, and actually to our unconscious mind, and it becomes a hodgepodge. It becomes a commotion. And what kind of thoughts are there at that time? Mostly fear. Attachment. Fear of the unknown and attachment to the known. Everything else centers around it. Fear to the unknown, because we do not know where we are going. And that feeds our attachment to the known. Attachment to the known feeds the fear of the unknown. The fear and attachment, they start supporting each other and nourishing each other. and then we are totally kept, we become captives of our own fear and attachment. Then the rest of all other soldiers, the entire army of all other thoughts and sentiments and feelings, they come and grab our consciousness. That's what happens at that time. But if we have learned how to deal with our subhuman tendencies while we are in good shape of our body and mind, then we can manage those last few moments of our life properly. And that's what here, how to subdue our subhuman nature. The four primitive urges, self-preservation, hunger, sleep, and sex. Because all the thoughts, all emotions, they are ultimately connected to hunger, sleep, self-preservation, and progeny. If we understand those things properly, we can make a big difference during the time of departure. But the thing is, again, we have been hearing all these things for ages. We have been reading these things in the books. Bible never told us that go and hate somebody. We have great faith in the Bible. We adore Bible. But why are we not able to practice love your neighbors as thyself? Why? Why are we not able to practice it? Why do we still hate, especially those who are very close, near and dear to us? So the knowledge is there. All the scriptures are telling almost the same thing. Whether it's Buddha, Christ, Krishna, Moses, anybody, all of them are saying the same thing. Don't hurt anybody. Be kind. Be nice. Love God. Don't waste your time and energy. Life is very, very precious. Surrender yourself to God. Obey the commandments of God. Why are we not able to follow all those rules? Knowledge is there. But there seems to be some another force behind us which just all of a sudden clouds our mind, forces us to forget what we know, forces us forget to remember what kind of resolution we made just a couple of days ago, and we still fall in the same old trap. So there seem to be two forces functioning simultaneously within us. This intellectual knowledge and the power of unconscious. There is constant war between our conscious understanding and the unconscious force, or the force of the unconscious mind, power of the unconscious mind. So there is war between our conscious mind and unconscious mind. Somehow our unconscious is not strong enough to remind the unconscious that, hey, sorry, I have understood what life is all about. I understand what is the most important thing in my life, and I must pursue my goal. We forget all that thing. So there is always a war going on. Practically speaking, then, what to do with this thing? We know that there is constant war going on, and we must allow knowledge to win, and we must continue moving toward the goal. But still, we find ourselves driven by some unconscious forces, and unconscious forces are receiving their impetus. Those unconscious forces are being supported by the unconscious contents which are deposited in our unconscious mind. Memories, habit patterns, and those unconscious contents were first created by our karmas. We performed certain actions. We performed certain actions in our thought, speech, or even at physical level. and the impressions of every single action. Has been deposited in our unconscious mind in the form of memory, and through constant repetition it has been becoming deeper and deeper. The grooves are getting deeper and deeper. Then we wonder that where is the beginning and end of it? Where can we, how can we break the cycle? It's an old story. When is this old story going to end? That we performed karmas long time ago, and then because of those karmas, we created certain samskaras and vasanas, we created certain subtle impressions which are deposited in our unconscious mind, and now from the depth of our unconscious, our conscious is now being governed and guided. And therefore, at a very unconscious level, we are motivated by our unconscious contents, and that is how we have very little choice. Then we wonder, what is the answer to this whole problem? Well, simple answer can be that reach the point where you created the karmic mess in the first place. Is it really easy? Is it possible? Answer is, however, it is not really possible. It's not that easy to reach that realm in time and space to figure out where we performed our actions first time. What motivated us to perform the actions in the first place? These questions are unanswered questions. And the answers available here and there are always subject to further questions. But one thing can be said, that there are two main factors, and this is only from the practical standpoint. There are two main factors, kama and krodha. Kama means desire, lust, clinging, liking, wanting. All those components together are termed, expressed, or explained in one term called kama, desire, you may call it, and krodha, anger. Exact question, when Krishna gave this his lofty discourse about life and the immortal nature of the soul and how one must continue working toward the highest goal of life, Krishna gave all that lofty discourse to Arjuna. And in the process, he told that ultimately it's the mind. And Krishna and Arjuna, oh Arjuna, mind is very mysterious. And it's the mind that creates bondage. And if it's trained and tamed properly, then the same mind can work toward liberation. And Arjuna asked a very beautiful question that I understand all these things. Intellectually, I'm fine. I know what's the problem, what the problem is. But Krishna, still one question is left in my mind. That what causes the mind to work against the wishes of the soul? What causes mind to work against its own conscience? What causes mind to ignore the voice of heart? What causes mind to forget all the great decisions it made just a little ago? And what causes mind to commit itself for unhealthy acts? Athakena prayuktoyam papam charati purushah anichchanapi varshneya. And in many, many cases, O Krishna, even while mind is drawn to perform certain actions, it knows that it is not right thing, and mind does not want to do it, and still it does it.
We do not want to do it. And while we are in the process of doing it, we hate doing it, and still we do not know how to stop doing it. Why is that? Anichchanna pivarshaneya baladyu nayojita. It looks like there is some is poking behind us. Someone is just, you know, forcing us to do it, although we do not want to do it. And Krishna gives the answer. Very beautiful answer.
Kamesha krodhesha rajo gunan samudbhava mahasano mahapapma vidhinam ihivairinam.
It's the kama, it's the krodha, it's the desire, and it's the anger that forces the mind to do all these things. And kama is the greatest of all eaters, and he never gets satisfied. Mahasano, it has an unlimited appetite. And Mahapapma, whereas the Krodha, the anger, anger is the greatest of all sinners. It forces us to perform the silliest and nastiest actions.
O Krishna, yes, I understand that because I have direct experience of that. What is the remedy for this whole problem? Krishna says, exactly that's what Patanjali later on in his Yoga Sutra got that answer from the Upanishad and from Bhagavad Gita. Abhyas vairagya abhyam tan nirodha. Exactly that's what Krishna says. Abhyasa and vairagya. The practice and dispassion. Practice and dispassion. Keep your mind focused on one thing. Don't let it move here and there. And always remember that you are here on this planet only for a short period of time. Nothing in this world, including your own body, belongs to you. All you have gotten on lease, on rent for a while. Use it. Once you have used it, purpose is over. Leave it behind and walk forward. Don't get attached to anything that you have, including your body. Abhyasa and vairagya, non-attachment and dispassion. That is the answer. Well, where do we begin? First three chakra and why? This dispassion, practice and dispassion, where do we begin doing any kind of practice? We must begin at the lower chakra level. First chakra, Muladhara, the center of earth element, solidity, heaviness. Psychologically speaking, that is the center of fear, hunger, self-preservation. Second chakra, the center of water element, fluidity, liquid. Psychologically speaking, the center of desire, lust, attachment, and all the offshoots, all the children of desire and attachment. If we work at the level of these first two chakras, organize our life, organize our four primitive urges, hunger, fear, sleep, and sex, then the life will be regulated. We will not lose too much energy. Mind will become clearer. Mind which is clouded by these primitive urges and thoughts and emotions springing forth from these urges. Once mind is free from all that, then that mind can become our friend and can help us move forward. That mind can become steady, and thereby that mind can become fit for practicing any discipline you undertake. And that mind can also understand the value of non-attachment dispassion and the value of attaining the state of desirelessness and thereby attaining freedom. So I was saying that how, practically speaking,
especially in our times today, the activities which are governed by our first three lower chakras have to be organized if we want to clean up our action, our karmas, and perform healthy actions so that mind doesn't get entangled further. That is why here we have karma and the first three lower chakras. There are seven chakras. According to some scriptures, there are nine chakras. According to some other scriptures, there are even more than nine chakras. But seven chakras are the main prominent chakras. Chakras means wheel or hub, wheel of life, where consciousness and the power of consciousness is concentrated, condensed, and has become a hub for rotating the wheel of life. So the first one here in the human body, there are seven chakras. The lowest one is at the bottom of the spine, somewhere in the perineum area between anus and genitals, and it's called Mula Dhara. Mula means root, Adhara means base, the root chakra, the base chakra. What is characteristic of Mula Dhara, the lowest chakra? It is located somewhere in medical terminology in the area where we have our phylum terminale, the tailbone ends and a bunch of nerve endings are situated in the fleshy area where the tailbone ends. So it means Mula Dhara is the extreme end of our brain. If our spinal column is an extension of our brain, then the Mula Dhara area, the lowest chakra, is the extreme end, the lowest end of our brain. Brain is center of thinking, organized thinking. All great ideas come here. And then the command is sent from the brain to the rest of the body. The Mula Dhara, however, is the lowest end. It represents the lowest level of thinking, lowest level of intelligence. From psychological standpoint, the Mula Dhara is the center of fear, self-preservation, two of the primitive urges, survival issues. Let's say it is the center of our survival issues. Hunger and self-preservation are two main survival issues. All other thoughts, sentiments, feelings, emotions, which are related to our survival issues, are functions of our Mula Dhara center. How do we think, speak, and act when our consciousness is trapped at the Mula Dhara chakra? When our consciousness is trapped at the Mula Dhara center, we are occupied by survival issues, our fears, our concerns, our issues are all related to one thing: how to survive phobia. Like when the consciousness, you are just about to start your car, you are driving your car, and your brain has shifted from your skull to the bottom of your spine. There is phobia. I don't know what is going to happen. I don't know whether I have enough gas. I don't know whether I will reach on time. The fear. Anything that comes in the mind, I might get into accident. And if that happens, then what will happen to me? Who will take care of me? That kind of negativity. Negativity originating from fear, survival issues. That is the characteristic. That's how we act. That's how we think. That's what we talk. We become negative. He had told you that keep driving and finally you will see. It's only a mile or so and then you will come to such and such sign and then you will take left turn or right turn. Because of impatience, which is also characteristic of Muladhara. So you have been driving for a while, and according to you have been driving for so long. I think person did not give. I think I took some wrong exit, I took some wrong turn. And therefore you are just about to reach that particular sign before. By that time you became impatient and you took another turn, hoping that you are making a right decision. You are being smart. Then you get trapped. Muladhara. You are guided by Muladhara chakra. You are not guided by the sixth chakra, the center between eyebrows. And that's what it creates, so many traps. That's just an example I gave you. Same thing in relationship. We are trapped, our consciousness is trapped in the Muladhara center, and therefore person smiled very nicely, but you have your own interpretation. You left several telephone messages, but somehow for some reason person did not return your call. Now you are feeling negative. I think there is something fishy here, and I think she really doesn't love me. Yeah, I know, and she must be involved in somebody else, and she's cheating on me. Things like that. All these kinds of whatever, because it's the first chakra issue, will occupy your mind and will create a situation where you will think according, in that manner. And what is the difference between the deluded and enlightened state of Muladhara chakra? One thing is very important. Same chakra, if it is in good health, if you have access to this chakra, if you have mastery over this chakra, then you also attain freedom from the related issues. People have a very amazing kind of concept about this chakra theory, Kundalini Yoga. They think that, he is stuck with the first chakra issue. You are stuck. I am sitting here on this seat. I am not stuck on this seat. If I get stuck, that will be the problem. So you gain access to your first chakra. You become familiar with the first chakra related issues and shaktis, energies. And you learn how to work with all those issues properly. And the other one is, you get deluded, you get stuck, you get caught at the first chakra. These are two different things. Do you need to have your first chakra active or inactive in order to grow spiritually? What will be your answer? Active but in organized manner. You are energetic. You are vibrant. But there is difference between being energetic and being violent. When you do not know what to do with your energy, and when your energy is disoriented and running into different directions without a purpose and meaning, then that is bad. But you do not need to be totally run down with your energy. The child is energetic, gets in all kinds of troubles and mischief, beats up others, children, bumps into lamps, walls, punches, bites, pinches, throws tantrum. Energy, the child is energetic, but somehow that energy is not directed properly. To handle that child, you do not need to make that child crippled. If child is sick and not being able to get up, child cannot be violent, because the child does not have energy to be violent. But that's not a good thing, to have that child totally dull. Child become dull. Same is the case, exactly is the case with the Muladhara Chakra. If it's aggravated, disoriented, disorganized, although accompanied by energy, lots of energy, person will be running into all directions, and the whole energy is just getting into feeding fear, survival issues. At physical level also, this area will become active, but that activity will be simply in a destructive manner, in a non-productive manner. Whereas that chakra is active, that activity will turn into stability, because the one of the main functions of that chakra is stability. Because this chakra is center of earth element solidity, you will become solid person, solid in your words, solid in your behavior, solid in your promises. And if it's not properly trained, tamed, and organized, then same solidity can turn into being dense. You will become dense, slow, lazy. So it's that particular chakra does not need to be killed, does not need to be subdued. That needs to be mastered. That needs to be made vibrant, alive, energetic, properly guided. That is the difference. This is the case with every chakra. Every chakra. Your heart is open. Where you have such an open, nice heart. That can be very nice. That could be terrible too. You have such openness. You don't have any block. There are no blocks in your heart. But if you are not careful, if you are not intelligent, you can be a very gullible person. Most of terrible things are done by people who have very wonderful open heart, because they are gullibles. They can be convinced by anybody about anything. Really true? He said that? I can't believe that. My God. They are nice people. Because their heart is open to everybody. There are no doors in their hearts. Whereas the other one who is open heart, completely heart with very closed heart, person doesn't care for anything, doesn't make any difference, anything. Same thing with Muladhara Chakra. It has to be active, vibrant, properly organized. That's called a balanced chakra, balanced Muladhara. Imbalanced, aggravated Muladhara creates chaos. Now, what kind of situation do we have in our modern society usually? Our chakra is active or inactive in most of cases? Tell me. We have active chakra, but active, but in a very disorganized manner. In a very disorganized manner. We have become master of fear. Our Muladhara Chakra is being bombarded every day in so many different ways. So many different ways. There is so much insecurity out there. Similar is the case with Swadhisthana Chakra, the second chakra. The characteristic, what is the characteristic of second chakra? Desire, attachment, and then related issues, greed, clinging, holding on to, not letting go, lust, sensuality, entertainment, fun, always wanting to be with somebody, leaning on others, being dependent, not finding any fulfillment or contentment in oneself, rather trying to get it with the people around or with the things around us. Second chakra, issue. At physical level, then it reflects into sensuality. Sensuality in all terms of all those five senses. Touch, taste, smell. But if it's organized, there will be a great sense of joy, and there will be a balanced way of enjoying the objects of our senses. And from every enjoyment, there will be nourishment, nurturance being received. A disorganized second chakra becomes cause of losing energy. An organized second chakra attracts the nourishment through sense pleasure. Therefore, it knows how to impose self-discipline, which is healthy. Because it is, you enjoy life only when you have a disciplined life. An indisciplined person's enjoyment and pleasure also last for a moment, whereas a disciplined person's even sensual pleasures last for a longer period of time. That is the second chakra. Therefore, having access to second chakra and organizing the second chakra energies, that is a great spiritual achievement. And in that process, it has to be made active. Just as you have to have your first chakra in good, vibrant health, but it must be under control. Similarly, second chakra, it has to be vibrant, active. Only then you will be able to overcome. Only then you will be able to understand the difference between healthy enjoyment and unhealthy indulgence. If we do not understand the difference between healthy enjoyment and unhealthy indulgence, then we will be doomed. will be bound to be dissipated and distracted by everything and will not be able to work with ourselves at all. In our modern times, try to see how many of our problems are associated with our first and second chakra issues. How many actions do we perform under the influence of first and second chakra issues, and how many actions do we perform under the influence of higher chakras, that is related to love, compassion, kindness, fearlessness, devotion to God, desire for enlightenment. The majority of our actions are motivated by our first two chakra related issues. That's what, how do we think, speak and act when our consciousness is trapped at the Swadhisthana chakra? Most of that's what we are doing. We need this, we need that, I hate him, I hate her, I like that person. No. And there is so much exposure, there is so much pressure from every direction on our first and second chakra. What is the difference between deluded and enlightened state of Swadhisthana chakra? You have healthy desires. You are a vibrant person. You have appreciation for beauty. But at the same time, you do not find yourself as a consumer of beauty. A disorganized second chakra will force you to become consumer. You want to consume the entire beauty that is held in the nature, in the objects, in the relationship. Whereas if your second chakra is organized, you will appreciate, you will admire, you will be delighted to see the beauty everywhere, but at the same time, you will not become the victim of beauty. Disorganized second chakra, people with disorganized second chakra become victim of beauty. Beauty which is manifesting in the form of sound, taste, touch, smell, texture, structure, size, shape, color. These are the different ways the beauty, the subtle divine beauty is manifesting. A person with organized, healthy, vibrant, active, energetic second chakra will see, perceive, and experience beauty in everything, everywhere, through every sense organ. But at the same time, will not become victim of that beauty. Because a victim of beauty wants to grab and indulge in the object, enjoying the object that seems to be beautiful and joyful. That's the difference. And you can imagine how much joy your mind will have, and therefore how stable and harmonious the mind will become if it overcomes to see the ugliness in the objects of the world and perceives only beauty, but at the same time does not become hungry of eating, chewing, that beauty through our eyes and nostrils and ears. And you can imagine how healthy it can become. That is where the spirituality begins. Spirituality begins at the second chakra, where you start seeing the wave of beauty and bliss throughout the universe. You are doing like, what's called that, surfing? You are riding the wave, but you are not drowning in the wave. The spirituality begins from there. That you start seeing Satyam as Shivam, the truth as auspicious, and the truth and auspicious as beauty. Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. The experience of God, the experience of truth, the experience of divine being as truth, auspiciousness and beauty begins at the second chakra. But if the second chakra is disorganized, then there is no way that one can see the beauty, bliss and truth. Rather, what happens? We become distracted, It's like an ant who gets buried in the heap of sugar and dies. We drown in the experience of beauty because we rush to the beauty so fast, we want to grab it at such a fast pace that we bump into relationship and drown. That's called bumping into relationship and drowning because we could not stand still and we could not watch how beautiful she is, how beautiful he is, how wonderful that object is, how beautiful that experience is. Rather, we bump into and hit. The second chakra is so weak, so disorganized, that our experience of joy, experience of happiness, experience of beauty lasts for a second, and thus the mind remains unsatisfied. It tries to go back in the same old fashion again and again, try to reassociate itself with the same experience what it had little ago. But that experience lasts only for a second. It's very dissatisfying. And this way, we keep trying to re-experience and thereby recapture tiny little droplet of joy and beauty. That is called a habit of, that is called function of a weak or disoriented, disorganized second chakra. But once this second chakra is made healthy, strong, energetic, then itself becomes the starting point of our spiritual journey, and then our bhoga, vishayananda, the experience of vishaya, the sensual experience, the sensual object, our sensuality turns into paramananda, highest bliss. That is why second chakra is called swadhisthana, her own abode, the residence of the divine being, the residence of the divine mother, the residence of the kundalini shakti, the residence of our soul. The only thing is, in this particular, this is like bedroom of the kundalini shakti, rather than the living room and the office room. Second chakra is the bedroom of kundalini shakti, where we think that bedroom is only for sleeping. That's how we assign usually our bedrooms, you know, in the house. A particular room is for sleeping. Is it really necessary that you sleep and become unconscious and have no awareness of everything in your bedroom? No. Bedroom is not death room. No. Bedroom should be a rest room where you take rest, get rest, and become fresh. Not become unconscious, not become totally lost. We get lost in the disorganized, improperly understood second chakra. And that is what's happening in the world. Lots of problems today, if you look in the world, in our modern world, that majority of our problems are in the first and second chakra area. And the rest of the problems that we noticed has its origin somewhere in the first and second chakra area, physically as well as psychologically. The problems related to ovaries, testes, uterus, kidney, bladder, colon, this is the problem area. And then the problem physiologically. Psychologically, the problems are related to fear, anger, attachment, insecurity, desire, food, and then it spreads everywhere. So how much problems we are creating by first and second chakra related karmas. Let's call it karma. It's called first and second chakra karma. And now you look at the totality of your actions that you are performing physically, mentally, that how many of our actions are related to first and second chakra related issues. I think majority of our actions are related to that, and mostly in a disturbed fashion, and very few of us are using our hunger, using our, very few of us are able to transform our desire into a lofty ambition, spiritual ambition. If we lack desire, lacking desire means, weak desire means weak second chakra. A person of weak desires, it means a person is weak, person does not have strong desires, it means person's second chakra is weak. But very many of us are filled with desires. It's not that we have a weak second chakra. But our desires are scattered desires. And those desires, very few of us are able to or have transformed our desires into a lofty, spiritual, illuminating ambition. Some of us organize our desires and transform those desires into worldly aspiration. We become ambitious. And then that ambition drives us crazy. We do not know where to have a stop sign. We do not know how good is that ambition. And then that ambition begins to feed our ego. That ambition begins at the second chakra, but manifests in the third chakra. Usually the ambition is described to be the characteristic of third chakra, the navel center. But the third chakra has its root in the second chakra. Third chakra will become dull, dead, if the forces at the second chakra are damaged. Ambition, motivation, self-motivation, enthusiasm, courage have their roots in strong desire. If you don't have a strong desire, you will not have courage to pursue your desired object. So you have to have second chakra in order to support your third chakra, which is the center of vibrant energy, the fire of courage, enthusiasm, self-motivation, self-trust. But very few of us transform these trillions of ripples of desires and turn them into one big, huge wave, tide of grand ambition, where you want to accomplish the highest goal of life, although you do not know what is the goal of life, but at least you have decided to know what is the goal of life, and all other desires, let all other desires become secondary to your biggest desire, that is to be happy and healthy and productive in this lifetime, and be good and useful to yourself, and be good and useful to others, and die only after the purpose of life is accomplished. No. There's a difference between these two statements. No. I must attain my goal before I die, statement number one. I have to achieve my goal of life before I die. There's another statement. I cannot die, and I will not die unless I achieve the goal of my life. It's like even you have courage, so much, your desire is so strong, your second chakra is so strong that you are telling that I am not going to die unless I have achieved the goal of my life. Instead of saying that I will achieve the goal of life before I die. No, I will die only after I have achieved the goal of life. That's called perfect coordination between second and third chakra, where third chakra is very strong and active, but supplying its all energies to nourish the third chakra. The entire second chakra is in the service of third chakra. That is called yoga. That is when we experience the Kundalini Shakti, resting in the second chakra rather than sleeping in the second chakra. Kundalini Shakti is sleeping in the second chakra. That's her permanent abode. That's where she rests, because other places, you know, first chakra is not a good place to sleep. Even physiologically, it's not a good place to sleep. Each time you sit, you know, it's so much pressure on it. No, it's very suffocating there. Okay. How do the Muladhara and Swadhisthana chakra interact with each other? They are interconnected. Hunger and self-preservation and at the first chakra. Desire, or let's say sex and the sleep at the second chakra. Remember, both sleep and sex are interconnected. And they both are connected to the food and fear. You can learn how to relax and gradually have control over sleep when you regulate your diet and regulate your sex life. And most importantly, when you understand that the fear is totally an illusory phenomena, that which is not supposed to happen, that cannot happen, that will not happen, and that which is supposed to happen, that will happen despite your all effort. Therefore, why to worry and why to be fearful? If this thing makes sense and if it has become an integral part of your understanding, then you will notice that your appetite is in moderate manner. You cannot overeat and you cannot undereat. And if that is the case, then you will notice that your sleeping, your sleep is also organized, and that's called relationship, interaction between first and second chakra. And then automatically you have access to your third chakra, because you don't have too many obstacles to understand the functioning forces of your third chakra. What is the term for the karmic knot created at the level of these two chakras? Called Rudra Granthi. Granthi means knot. Granthi means knot. Knot of Rudra. When our four primitive urges become convoluted, hunger, fear, sleep, and sex become disorganized. And as a result, when from these fountains, from these sources, four sources, our desire, attachment, anger, greed, hatred, jealousy, delusion, loss of memory, all these different streams start flowing, then we are doomed. These thoughts and emotions and the actions performed by and the results of the actions, they influence the energies in this area, in the area of first and second chakra, in a such a negative manner that the energy channels, the nadis, the energy channels, they become influenced. They get caught and entangled, and they create a knot. That particular knot is called Rudra Granthi. There is very special reason why I mentioned this thing. And this particular subject is described in greatest detail in a particular aspect of a particular tradition of yoga called Sri Vidya. One of the most sublime, or let's say the most sublime path of yoga, where Kundalini yoga, tantra yoga, bhakti yoga, raj yoga, all these different paths, they merge. They become one path. That path is called Sri Vidya, the holiest path, the most sublime path, where this concept is described. And the scripture, one of the scripture, which is most prominent scripture, and the most celebrated scripture of our tradition is called Saundarya Lahari, the wave of beauty and the wave of bliss. Especially, there are that scripture consists of 100 mantras, 100 verses, and the verses 8, 9, 14, 32, 41, 92, these are the mantras and the commentary on these verses which describe this concept. How our thought, speech, and action motivated by the disorganized, first, 2 second disorganized chakras create a knot. And that knot is the hardest among all knots. The problems which are created by our lust, hatred, desire, attachment, and actions we perform under these circumstances create such a terrible knot that no one other than the great divine being who permanently and eternally dwells at the third chakra can ever disentangle and loosen that knot. What is the unique force that destroys the Rudra Granthi, that knot, and thereby granting us freedom from this level of karma? And answer is Rudra Deva. That word is missing. Rudra, you may write down here, Rudra Deva. Rudra, the same word, R-U-D-R-A, and then Deva, D-E-V-A, Rudra Deva, the shining divine being known as Rudra Deva. Yes, see, here, coming here, next point. The divine fire at the navel center, Rudra Deva, the destroyer of the subhuman or the demons within. That great force is the one who destroys. That is why this Rudra Deva, one of the prayer in the morning and evening prayer we recite here, Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devo Maheshwara. Guru. Brahma is the Guru. Vishnu is the Guru. And Shiva, the Rudra, is the Guru. Why? This one, Shiva, this Rudra, is the destroyer of this particular knot. The knot that is here at the first and second chakra level, the destroyer of that knot is called Rudra. The fire, Rudra means the fire, the divine fire. The fire which does not know how the darkness looks like. The eater of fire. The Shakti, the power of that fire is called Kali. The divine being, divine mother, Kali. One who just eats all the darkness constantly. There is, one who has darkness as her diet. When you eat something, what you do? You eat it and you digest it. And whatever you eat and digest, you squeeze the nourishment out of it. And that nourishes the food you eat, nourishes your body, provided it is digested and assimilated by you. So there is a force within us, residing at the navel center, known as Rudra Deva. His intrinsic force is called Kali, the one who devours, one who eats the darkness, our subhuman tendencies, the demon within us, and eats in a manner that he or she, the divine being, Rudra Deva, the divine mother, that great force, Raudri, the great force, the power of Rudra, the power of fire, eats all those subhuman tendencies, digests it, assimilates it, and provides nourishment. Someone who is not guided by, one who is not assisted by that divine force called fire, Rudra Deva, residing at the navel center, for such a person, those subhuman tendencies are like wild beasts. Whereas those who are guided by, supported by, protected by the divine being residing at the navel center, for such person, everything, all sensual pleasures, all worldly objects which correspond to our first and second chakra, all desires, all the whims, all the clingings, all the ambitions, they become the source for spiritual upliftment. Provided we are guided by the divine fire residing at the navel center. Same Rudra Deva is known as Pashupati, the lord of animals, the yogic power that helps us master our animal tendencies. This is the understanding of this particular concept alone can unveil all the mystery that surrounds Tantra Vidya, the Tantra, where people think that Panchamakara, that tantrics eat meat and eat fish and drink wine and perform gestures and have sex, you know, tantrics, ritual sex. A true yogi of Tantra is actually the student of the third chakra related practices. By mastering the forces of third chakra, that person comes to know how to conquer and how to vanquish the animals within. How to digest them, how to eat them, how to digest them, how to transform this world into, how to transform the worldly objects, how to transform the worldly pleasures, how to transform worldly entertainment, sensual objects into spiritual means. That's what this whole concept is all about. And that means learning the technique for transforming the lower tendencies, subhuman tendencies, into divine tendencies. And that's what this Kriya is all about, which we'll discuss again. Then what is the conclusion? Well, conclusion is, try your best to work with your first and second chakra related issues as skillfully, wisely as possible. But the problem is, when you are already within the attack range of a wild beast, whether it's tiger or lion, then none of these skills really work very well. You are already there, and the beast is about to attack. Beast runs faster than you. And beast is fully equipped with its claws and teeth. You cannot outrun a tiger, especially when you are just next to it. Okay. But if you are like a tortoise, you may be able to defeat a tiger. In National Geographic, one day I was watching a movie of National Geographic. A tiger chased a deer, could not catch it, was very mad and angry. And on its way, he was coming back and he saw a turtle crawling, pounded the turtle. And turtle immediately withdrew its limbs and its shell. And the tiger kept pounding. And the turtle was just fine. And the tiger was so mad, and after that, the tiger just scratched its own face and walked away. And the tortoise remained quiet for a few more minutes. And when tortoise knew that tiger was gone, then again it took out its limbs and walked to the safety. That's all we can do while we are already caught. We are already born in a family where the family is a broken family. You know, such a family, mother, father fight, and we don't know what to do, and we are just left at the mercy of nature, mercy of environment. Television is constantly teaching us how to be violent. Oh, from everywhere, we are now caught. So what can we do? We have to wait till we grow. For us here, we are grown-ups. It's okay. We waited long enough as a tortoise. Now come to safety. So that is why in this particular tradition, which we call Sri Vidya, in the Kundalini Yoga, there is a myth that you start practicing at your Muladhara, then you from Muladhara go to Swadhisthana, the second chakra, third chakra, fourth chakra. That is a myth. How can you be macho when you are so weak? You cannot lift your own. You cannot get up when you are trying to be macho. You can't lift your own hand. You are trying to macho. No. Not way. Always, you begin your journey from first chakra, take a leap, go to the third chakra. Or even in most cases, forget the first and second chakra. It's too complicated. It's too complicated. We do not have enough knowledge. We do not have enough sankalp shakti, the power of will and determination. We do not have a great teacher to guide us. We do not have our own body and mind and soul, everything in one place, fully supporting us on the path. Our intellectual knowledge is not strong enough. Our emotional maturity is not good enough. We don't have enough emotional maturity. Our spiritual fervor is not enough. We don't have enough fire to begin with. So this is not right time to start working with the first and second chakra. Let it be there, fine. Don't fight. Don't go against it. Don't suppress. Don't repress. Don't indulge. Try to live a moderate life, fine. However, go directly to the great divine being within you. That is, be empowered and guided by the power of navel center. Have Rudradeva as your guide and friend. That is the best approach. Go to the second chakra, go to the third chakra. And the energy you gain, the light you gain, the guidance you get from the third chakra, gently and skillfully use all that knowledge, use all that shakti, the power of the third chakra to overcome or organize organize the forces of your first and second chakra, and thereby minimize the impact of the karmas motivated by anger, hatred, jealousy, greed, attachment, desire. And that is the proper way to practice.